Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast. District-wide Facilities Study Presentation. Complete recording. March 3, 2015.
Okay, we're here tonight to give you an overview of the Cheltenham Township District-wide Facility Study. The electronic copy was sent to the board members. We've had a chance to review it all. Okay. So today's agenda, we're going to just introduce the team and acknowledge the people that worked on the study. We're going to describe the purpose and the requirements of the district-wide facility study. We're going to do a summary of the content that's included, the information that's included in the study, and then open it up for questions and comments. With us tonight, we have Tom Gilbert, myself, Brian Good, and Scott Adams are the two project managers in our office that works on the project. The new design group was a site civil engineer. We have Lee Snyder over here from Snyder Hoffman. Baker Ingram provided a report in the study. And I also included information from Business Information Services. They're the demographers that you commissioned to do the enrollment projections. Their information is also provided in the study. Acknowledgements, a study like this is not done by just the design team. It also has a lot of interaction with the administration and the building principals. We've met with each one of your principals and some assistants in some of the schools to get some of the information that's provided in the study. Purpose of a district-wide facility study, it's really a tool to develop a master plan for construction planning. It's also a requirement from the Department of Education when a district is seeking reimbursement for a construction project. And then the facility study is part of Plan Count Part A. Plan Count is an acronym for planning for construction. Part A is project justification. The requirements of a district-wide study include analysis of the demographics and enrollment projections, analysis of current building capacities for future growth, an evaluation of district-owned buildings' physical condition, compliance with code codes, analysis of cost to upgrade facilities for short-term planning, an evaluation of the energy performance for each building, and an analysis of potential construction renovation options with estimated project costs. Okay. So the way we structured the study, we've broken it down into six sections. Section one is an overview of the school district. Section two is enrollment data. Section three is building capacity analysis. Section four is building evaluation for each of the district-owned facilities in the school district. Section five is construction options. We've broken it into two categories, grade reconfiguration, and the second being maintaining the current grade configuration. And then section six is the office. Section one, the school district overview. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about the information provided by Business Information Services. I believe you had a presentation of the work that they prepared. But the information that I included in the overview included the geography, the wealth and economic profile, the growth and demographics, and then Mr. Note provided the K-12 educational program, which is also included in section one. Section two, again, information provided by Business Information Services, describes historical enrollments, live birth data, demographics, housing information, and enrollment projections. Okay, from this information, there's in section six, under demographics, then enrollment projections, some of the findings, page two, he has a couple of statements that he's made in his, I'm assuming it's a he, I don't know. It says, we have developed three projection models which range from a high of 10% growth during the next decade to a low of 1% growth overall. Based solely on the demographic factors, we would lean towards a low-end model, but the weak economy for the foreseeable future would make the high-end model more accurate. So that kind of left a little bit open. So what I did is for the purposes of this study, for each one of the schools, I used the median because I thought the economy seems to be improving. I don't think it's going to continue to be a weak economy. And the low seemed too low, so we just went with the median projections. And we did that for each one of the schools. There's a median line here. And then we also looked at the 2018-2019 enrollment projections. They continue to go up over the next 5 years, for 10 years out, but the first 5 years are the most accurate projections. And so you tend to continue to update your enrollment projections. But this is the year that we highlighted in doing analysis. Section 3, building capacity analysis. So we met with each one of your building principals and went through the floor plans and identified each space in the building and those spaces that get capacity. Now, for elementary capacities, you're generally looking at the general classrooms, grades K to 5, K to 6 actually. And you don't include for capacity those rooms that include special ed, art, music, and those type of spaces. For secondary schools, the capacity is based on not only the general classrooms, but you also get capacity for science, business, because kids are moving around the building. You're not, in an elementary school, you typically have one homeroom. And that, in the secondary school, you're moving around to various other program spaces. You don't get capacity for special ed. So if you look at the charts that's provided in the plan content, what I want to talk about here is the two ways that we look at capacity. We look at it from a reimbursement standpoint, and we look at it from a planning standpoint. The reimbursement portion of it is looking at it at the PD capacity. SAFPE capacity, which is the Council of Educational Facility Planners International, is our organization that we belong to, and they have a recommendation for planning purposes. And at elementary school level, for PDE, they're looking at for an elementary school level that the students are there 100% in their classroom 100% of the time all day long. For planning purposes, you don't want to build a school at 100% occupied. You want to have some flexibility for growth in the school. So we look at a B rating factor, I guess you could call it, or 90% utilization for elementary schools. And that's what's charted here. You see we have PDE looks at 25 students per classroom, four classrooms get 100% capacity. And then for kindergarten, for the kindergarten, because the kids are in there all day long. Whereas for the SAFPE capacity, looking at the functional capacity of the school, you're looking at 540 kids. So that's really giving you a range. It's giving you a range of 540 to 600 students. That's the range of capacity that you want to plan for. So you can deal with any fluctuations in enrollments. So that's how we got the capacities at the K-4 schools. At Elkins Park, let me just make a couple of notes here, looking at 25 classrooms at 25 students per classroom. PDE doesn't allow any capacity for classrooms that are under 660 square feet. So you get no capacity for that. So looking at the tabulation here, what we did at 90% capacity would be 563. But in reality, at Elkins Park, they're using those classrooms for general classrooms. They have to in order to be able to accommodate all the kids in the classroom. So if you added those 12 classrooms in, you're looking at probably accounting 830. The reason I bring this up is that if you're planning any kind of a renovation for Elkins Park, in order to get capacity, i.e. reimbursement from PDE, you want to right-size those buildings. 660 square feet is a room this size for a general classroom. And it looks relatively large, but really it's small when you put 25 chairs and a teacher's desk and move them around, moving around all those student desks. Okay, now like I said, for secondary schools, you get capacity for a variety of other program spaces. And we looked at, PDE looks at a 90% utilization for middle school. SAFPE's recommendation is 85%, so we're looking at that range again. And at the high school level, again, for secondary school, you get capacity for multiple schools, but SAFPE looks at a 90%, PDE looks at 90% utilization, and SAFPE looks at 80% utilization. Okay, I'm getting somewhere with this, just stay with me now. Okay, so we charted this, tabulated all that up, looked at the PDE capacity at 100% utilization, the functional capacity, tabulated all that up. So you can see what that is district-wide. Where I'm going with this is when you look at it compared to the enrollment projections. This is where it gets interesting. Okay. So you tabulate all these capacities up, you compare the capacity to the median projected enrollments. PDE's utilization, you're at 81% for all K-4 elementary schools, 90% for the functional capacity. So that looks pretty good. The 90 is what's recommended, you're under that. The problem is that it's not evenly distributed amongst all your elementary schools. And we know that because we know that Glenside has always been in the crunch with their enrollments there. So Elkins Park, now here's without those 12 classrooms, you can see way under in those schools. You add those 12 classrooms in, again, we're shooting for 90%, you're within that range. Now you can start to see how your buildings are functioning within the building, within the school district. At the secondary level, again, middle school, we're shooting for 85%. We're well under that. High school, we're shooting for 80%. We're within that range. So capacity is not an issue at the secondary schools. I'm not saying there's not any issues at the secondary schools. I'm saying capacity issues are not an issue. Okay. So that's building capacity. Section 4, building evaluation. So we looked at, we have a summary of the district-owned buildings. We do an evaluation of the sites and the buildings for each one of the facilities in the school district, which includes the energy star scorecard. And then we did a district-wide rating system, which is a point system to prioritize building needs. And this is actually a conditions report for each one of the schools. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail. You can read the information in the booklet on the 4 elementary schools that have been either renovated, new construction, or under construction. Because all of those are going to be brought up to, or have already been brought up to current standards. So we'll look at the schools that haven't been done yet. Elkins Park School, and I think the first sentence there really pretty much tells it. Built in 1955 with additions and renovations in 1990, and that's about it. I mean, there hasn't been, everything's pretty much original. It hasn't been a lot of work done, except where he's just doing things just to keep the building operational. Currently serves grades 5 to 6. See the square footage there. Looking at the existing site fixtures, New Second Street, Kingston. The school's a little bit dark here. The school is here. 90 parking spaces, 19-acre site. There's a cinder oval track here. In your booklets, you probably can see it better than on here, but there's two small soccer fields in that direction, and you can see the wind here in the field and the larger soccer field overlapping within that cinder track. There's no evidence of an above-ground stormwater management system, so there's likely not any stormwater management on the site. Again, everything's original. The school predates, well, the original building predates ADA, so you have a lot of non-ADA compliant features, which we've talked about. If you want me to get into it, I can, but we've talked about it. And every time we bring up the subject, looking at a district-wide study. But what it comes down to, material systems equipment throughout the building are original for the most part and exceeded their life expectancy. This looks like I'm in a submarine. Antiquated, temperature controls.
Submarine.
You go down into the lower levels of the building, the boiler's been leaking, the floors are wet. The boiler insulation around the boiler flue contains asbestos. The original steam boilers, only one is operational. Water pounding on the roof. You'll see this variety of the schools where there's just a lot of wear and tear on the outside of the building. The steel lintels at the windows heads have been rusted and need to be replaced. There's a lot of missing and deteriorated mortar in the brick. Cedarbrook Middle School, built in 1969, ADA modifications in 2011 to get an accessible path to the toilet rooms into the classroom. It served grades 7 to 8, 158,000 square feet. Some of the site features to talk about, it's a 33-acre site. And I put this along 309, which 309 was constructed in 1926. And if you remember, Ray probably reported that the geotechnical report had a lot of fill in this area, although I can't prove it, but and the school post-dates the construction of 209. It's likely that the fill came from the construction of the highway. You know, is there cutting fill in to put the highway in? Can't prove it, but that's probably a likely scenario. 95 parking spaces on the site.
PennDOT.
Yeah, don't sue PennDOT. It has a football field with a cinder track, 6 tennis courts. You'll see this typical with the site, hockey field overlapping the soccer fields, and the 2 side-by-side, and that's located in this. Here's the cinder track, here's the soccer field with a softball field with an overlapping soccer field, here's the baseball field with 2 overlapping soccer fields on it. Again, no evidence of an above-ground stormwater management system, likely probably one not there. Again, material systems equipment throughout the building have are original and exceeded their life expectancy. The locker rooms programmatically underneath the gym is not ideal. Original fixtures are not ADA compliant. If you remember when we were looking at doing some renovations previously, we were looking at doing a roof replacement on. There's 4 different kinds of roof systems on the roof, one of which has got 2 on top, 1 on top of it. And so it's 2 layers of roofing systems. And that's the new roof, the newest roof. This condition that's existing on the existing school, this parapet condition, that step is a terrible detail because it allows potential water infiltration down through the cavity wall. The cavity wall has a vermiculite insulation. You know what vermiculite is? It's very loose material. If it gets wet, it compresses. Maybe it's a value in building that exterior wall. You see evidence of couple of different things on the inside. We see bubble paint showing that there's water infiltration on the inside of the building. Going through the wall, we see other evidence on the exterior of the wall where there's moisture inside the wall and it's popping bricks out. We have rusting steel lintels in the brick. But even though we talked, and we have talked a lot in detail about the problems with Cedar Brook, the one thing about it is that the bones of the building are stable. It's steel frame construction. They knew when they built this building that the subsurface soil conditions were poor and that it was a fill condition, and they designed the foundations to accommodate that. But in some areas, you know, they got caissons, which is a big ass, because we just went after a presentation of big ass fans, right? Large foundations to hold the building up. There's no reported distress on the structural system. So, having said all the bad things about it, I just wanted to point out that the bones of the building are still good. Okay, Cheltenham High School, I know you're doing some renovations to the building now. Service grades 9-12, but it does have a lot of the same kind of conditions that we're talking about as some of the other schools. And here's a capstone, actually it's just a detail that's showing signs of distress. There's a lot of areas like in the stairwells where we're seeing this cracked glazed tile throughout the building. This is actually in the Meritorium, Spalding concrete at the Meritorium bleachers. Again, brick mortar deterioration of the parapet, stress cracks that we found inside the building. This is actually in the gym. And then we have the administration building, built in the early 1950s. Not a lot of maintenance done to it since then. The original slate roof, original windows. Same kind of brick conditions. This you can't see because it's way up, but you can see that the high portion of the multi-purpose room. This is the building that's on the roof below. Okay, you may remember from previous reports where we did a building evaluation rating system back in 2010. And that was when we were trying to figure out which school really need to come next. And that's when we determined Cheltenham was probably the best candidate. It's looking a little better now. Half the buildings are done. I say half by numbers, not by square footage district-wide, because your high school, middle school, and your bigger school, so there's still a fair amount of work that needs to be done. But this was our rating system. We provided the backup information in each one of the building evaluations to show how we came up with these numbers. Okay, so now we've gathered all that information. We've done our investigations of the building. Now we need to figure out, for planning purposes, what we can do. And some key planning considerations was great configuration, whether or not to do renovations, additions, or new construction, site selection, whether you're using the existing sites, you're looking at alternative sites, and then what is the cost and what's the schedule implications were also considerations. So we broke it down into two categories. One, grade reconfiguration options, looking at one middle school for grades 5 to 8. There's been a lot of talk about doing a K-5 elementary schools, which would also look at a 6-8 middle school. We'll talk about that later. We also did an option for a primary center, which would pull the kindergarten out of the elementary schools, and then again, look at the 6-8 middle school. And then the second category was maintaining the current grade configurations for Elkins Park and for Cedarbrook. All right, here we go. So, grade reconfiguration options. The grades 5 to 8 middle school, that really came out of a report that was prepared by the Grade Configuration Engagement Committee, and I'm sure you've heard a presentation about that. I don't need to probably get into too much detail about it, but I do want to make the point that that was a committee that was made up of teachers and parents and administrators. They got district-wide input throughout the community with parent and parent-teacher organizations, surveys that were distributed, community members, parents, support staff, faculty, and former faculty, and students. They looked at several grade alignment options that were considered, and the support that the committee moved for was for a combined 5 to 8 middle school. Because one of the key things that they looked at is that they'd like to eliminate one of the school transitions, and looked at potential for improved academic performance, and so on and so forth. So the first option that we looked at was a new 5 to 8 middle school at the Cedarbrook site. So this is abolishing the existing middle school. Now you're looking at, instead of 2 grades at the site, you're looking at 4 grades at the site. So when Renew was evaluating that, after thinking about what would probably come out of the traffic study and loading the residential neighborhood roads and stuff, that it probably would be required to do an access off of 309. What he was looking at is that providing signaled intersection at Line Kiln, providing entrance access that provided a drop-off area on the high drop-off area for bus loading here and hand drop-off here for additional parking. But you can see that we only have the six tennis courts. We have major overlapping of fields. There's just going to be a lot of play in those fields. Especially, even though we have overlapping fields there now we're adding 2 more grades to the site. So it's going to be further taxing the athletic fields on the site because more of the site being used up by a larger building to accommodate the population. Option 1A looks at renovating Cedarbrook and then adding the 5-6 component at the site. But you're still having a large building, you still have the overlapping fields, you still have 4 grade levels on the site, so you need to have that access off of 309. And you're looking at high construction costs for this as well. Option 2 is looking at a new middle school at Elkins Park. Well, Elkins Park is even a smaller site, so now you're getting even less fields. We were able to look at doing a separate drop-off area for parent drop-off here, with bus drop-off here, parking on the upper tier. But again, a high construction cost because this is looking at complete replacement of the school and adding 2 more grades to the site. Option 3 was looking at, okay, if the existing sites can't handle a 5-8 middle school, looking at a new site somewhere in the school district to accommodate a 5-8 middle school program with all the site requirements for athletic programs, site circulation, parking, athletic fields, and so on. 3A was constructing, doing it kind of in a phased way, looking at constructing the 7-8 portion now, and adding the 5-6 portion as means become available. Disadvantages: site availability, finding a site. that's available for sale. We have potentially major on-site and off-site improvements. It's going to be a high cost. The cost that I provide coming up here shortly did not include site acquisition because I didn't have an actual site to or price to add to the cost, so that would have to be added into it. Option four was actually taking it a step further, finding an even bigger site or a large enough site to provide not only a middle school but also an under-12 high school. And obviously that will be the highest cost option. So the table here is a cost summary of each one of these options. And they're all over $100,000. And you can see the thing in red is not including the $100,000.
All in favor.
This is what I was talking about, construction costs and site costs. I did that and wrote that down as a total project cost because we really want to know exactly what it's going to cost to finance. So, okay, so we went through that whole thing and then said, okay, trying to find existing sites or sites sufficiently to accommodate four grade levels. Trying to find availability of a large enough site within the school district to accommodate the program was problematic. Cost for land acquisition, site road improvements, high cost for replacing the multiple schools, land acquisition schedule, the schedule having to do with land acquisition, design, and construction was lengthy. Conclusion, you know, should we look at other alternatives that were more time sensitive and economically viable? So that's what this next couple of options as far as grade reconfiguration looks at. Okay, so the K to 5 option. How can the existing four elementary schools accommodate adding the fifth grade into the schools? And so using this chart and looking at the functional capacity, which has not changed in this scenario here, against the highest projected enrollment, adding that fifth grade in, you look at where your utilization factors are. Remember, we want to try to shoot for a 90%. So they're really kind of exceeding the 90% that we are shooting for in terms of functional capacity. All right, so what if we added on to the buildings? Well, Cheltenham was designed with flexibility in it, with additional capacity in it. Glenside, so, and to keep all the schools relatively the same size, Glenside has, we did design the opportunity to add four additional classrooms to that building. Myers, it's built out. Wingcoat, it's built out in the footprint that it is, but we have four special ed classrooms in that building that are full size. So those can be converted into regular classrooms to get additional capacity. Now, there's a downside to that because now you're taking away other educational programs that are needed for the delivery of the educational program. All right, well, having said that, we've raised our capacity up a little bit, but at the end of the day, we're still over the recommended, so we're within planning, but we're still over the recommended functional capacity of the buildings. Executive summary. The existing four elementary schools can handle a fifth grade. Building expansion does not provide adequate space. When you're really looking at, it's not just classrooms, it's also special ed classrooms, it's other programs that serve the K-5 program that need to be accommodated in those schools. The cost to add those four classrooms, so it's going to be a high cost per square foot because you're looking at a relatively small project for that. The four classrooms would be two on each end of the front of the building. Conclusion, we can't accommodate the fifth grade at the elementary schools. That really doesn't make the sixth grade model really viable option. So we looked at another way we could try to swing this. And that was to construct a new building on some undetermined site because the existing sites in the school district can't accommodate another new building. That would be some kind of early childhood center. It could be a full-day kindergarten center. It could be a pre-K and full-day kindergarten. What that does is it pulls the kindergarten out of your elementary schools. You can drop this fifth grade down into your elementary schools. It is a potential alternative to recapture private or charter school costs, gives some early childhood development opportunities. Disadvantages is trying to find a site to accommodate that transition in grades. It's an additional grade transition. And for that grade level, for that age group, they would go, everybody would start school together in the new primary school, and then everybody would get split up into all the other schools, which I didn't think was, I don't think that's an ideal situation. And again, you still have the implications of adding, even in the other scenario, if you look at adding sixth grade to the Cedarbrook site, even though it's only one grade, it's one additional grade. It's another third of the population being added to the Cedarbrook building. So you need to also look at not just adding classrooms, but you also look at those new core spaces. Is right now your cafeteria is not sized to handle two grade levels, much less three. Your auditorium, your gymnasiums, all those things would have to be upsized to accommodate an additional grade. So, executive summary. Existing elementary schools continue to support all these different things I kind of just talked about. Looking at just providing four grade levels at each of the elementary schools, that transition at a very young age is not really educationally a good consideration. The cost, the schedule, and based on other facility needs, you know, are we putting more money into the elementary schools or do we need to deal with the secondary schools? So that's why we looked at another category in maintaining the current grade configurations and really deal with the issues at Elkins Park and Cedarbrook. Because those are the schools that are immediate need of attention. Cedarbrook Middle School is closed right now. The students are dispersed at multiple other locations, which is not a great learning opportunity for those students. There is a financial impact to the school district for the lease space to accommodate those students at those multiple locations. And really, we need to explore solutions that are realistic, that meet the district's educational goals and are cost-conscious and time-sensitive. So in option five, we looked at renovating Cedarbrook at the Cedarbrook site for grades 7 to 8. We have sufficient capacity there. We can improve the programs through new construction and renovations and additions to the building. And one of the things when we looked at the roof replacement and the HVAC replacement project back in 2012, we were looking at a phased construction project because the kids were still in there. If there's any positive thing to look at with Cedarbrook, the building is unoccupied right now. You can renovate that building unoccupied. We can facilitate the schedule. You know, right now you're on district-owned land. You don't have to go through the whole site acquisition thing. We may even be able to facilitate the schedule through the land development process. We're not sure. We haven't gotten that far yet. And it is the least cost alternative compared to new. Disadvantages, but it's going to be, we know that it's going to be a comprehensive renovation project. And we're limited somewhat to the features of the existing building and site. Option 5A, again, is at the Cedarbrook site, but we're looking at a new Cedarbrook school, demolishing Cedarbrook. We're not limited by the features of the existing school, although we are limited by the features of the existing site. To facilitate the schedule, we do this district-owned land and the building's unoccupied. The facility will be fully new, but this is a higher cost option, obviously, because you're taking down the existing building and building a whole new building. So you're going to have a longer time frame for completion. So the students will be continuing to be dispersed for an extended period of time at alternative locations. Option six, looking at renovating Elkins Park at Elkins Park site. Same types of things that we looked at with Cedarbrook. 6A is looking at a new school there. Again, same type of things that we're looking at with Cedarbrook. Okay, so the cost, which take away from this, divide the high and the low, or low and the high cost range. But obviously, 5 and 6 are renovation projects. They're lesser cost than the new construction cost, 5A and 6A. Executive summary, the ability to deliver the educational program is not defined by the age of the building. Before the school was vacated, Cedarbrook Middle School is an award-winning school. It has nothing to do with the building, it has to do with your faculty, your staff, and your the delivery of the educational program. What the schools must do is offer an environment that is conducive to learning. It needs to provide adequate light, natural light. It needs to provide good temperature control. It needs to provide environmentally and acoustically sensitive spaces so that kids can be learning on their high school. All the options, whether it's new or renovations and additions, can be designed to support the educational program for a 21st century school. For renovations and additions, it's going to be less expensive than new construction. Districts can, they need to look at the funding, the borrowing capacity, continuing lease costs, association with the kids being dispersed at alternative sites. For a renovations and additions option, it would be a shorter design and construction schedule. There is a potential to facilitate the land development approvals, because we're not complete. We have the same number of students. We're not adding any additional students to the school. We're looking at a 7-8 building. But the priority is to get the middle school students back to their home school. So the executive summary conclusion that all options, whether it's renovations, additions, and to maintain the current grade configuration to provide adequate capacity and offer programs to enrich educational opportunities. Cedar Brook Middle School really needs to be the first priority, and the renovations and additions to Cedar Brook's less expensive and can be online sooner. The information provided in the area has been discussed and reviewed by the school board for 7 months. After weighing the advantages and disadvantages of several options, the school board approved the following resolution, which is reflective of option 5, presenting the district water facility study. So this committee recommends that administration be authorized to finalize the district-wide facility studies and condition upon the results of the study prepare a plan of justification for rebuilding the Cedar Brook Middle School. With that, we can open it up to any questions. We can go over into more detail if you'd like. But that's the order.
So the order will start at this one, Mrs. Wesley.
Thank you. So, a number of questions. Thank you for that really good overview of the very lengthy detailed report. in terms of renovating or building new under our current sites, we have to address both EP and Cedar Brook. So did you do a comparison of the total cost of direct comparison, total cost of renovating each of them at their respective sites versus a new site where they could both be the same location? But in the end, is it going to be, my concern is that in the end, it won't be that much less expensive to renovate at current locations, given that we have such huge issues with those buildings that need to be addressed. And my other concern is what we don't know, we don't know. And I think we ran into that with the Myers renovation that it ended up being more expensive. I know that in the draft report, Gilbert acknowledged that that is a disadvantage to renovating a current building, is that you may well run into unexpected situations that then cost more money.
I think the advantage with Cedar Brook Middle School is that because it's unoccupied and because we know the walls have to go, the roof has to go, the structure stays, that we're not trying to save things. We're not saving mechanical equipment. We're not saving anything. It's a gut redo. So the things that you run into when you pop a ceiling, you expected to keep something, and I didn't realize that was going to be there, really isn't going to be an issue because we're taking everything down the structure and starting all over. So I know what you mean about those unexpected things, but with the Cedar Brook Middle School project, it's really taking it down to the bones and replacing it with new materials. And that's not only the exterior walls, the roof, but it's also the infrastructure. So I think those surprises are going to be limited, more so than what you bring into at Myers, where you were keeping the building for the most part.
Right, it wasn't.
And then when you start running into things, is when you start opening things up that you intended to keep in So I think, to answer your first question, it's kind of comparing the numbers that you see here with the numbers that were divided in the five aid options, because those are combined schools.
Mm-hmm.
You see that cost comparison.
And another question is, I know that there was public engagement group that I believe met with Gilbert?
And no.
No?
That, yes. The 5-8, the grade configuration?
Not the grade configuration, but to review.
Yes. And that was on the public.
Right. And so can you talk a little bit about what that their input was in this process?
Kara got more questions than I did.
Well, we've not heard a summary of what that...
They're not done yet.
Okay. But I would...
They're not done.
But I assume they asked questions at the presentation. And I'm just interested in what sort of questions and if they were heading any direction. And if they're not done, what are they doing and when will it be done? What's sort of the status of that?
Just we are going to meet this Thursday at 6:30, and there's going to be a lot more discussion on that. They sent some agenda to me that they would like to talk about some of the RFP issues, and they want to clarify some of the construction, what we actually were doing.
Can you give us a synopsis of what that last meeting was about? What kinds of things they were looking at and discussing?
The last meeting was basically, I would divide it two parts. One was the financial, which was a lot of questions concerning the financial, and then we did have a presentation on the...
Yeah, they got the preview of this presentation.
Preview of this presentation. It wasn't completed, but whatever material we had at that time, we provided. And it was very positive on the construction part of it. The best of my knowledge, they all went towards the renovation, and they thought it was a great idea to do that. I didn't have too many questions concerning
that.
It wasn't much question. A lot of the finance issues was there. They did ask Ms. Michaels about that. And it was very, very positive meeting.
And you did a draft report and then the final report. What kinds of things changed? I didn't do a red line or a back and forth between the two versions.
Yeah, we had gotten some comments, some written comments from the draft study. We provided some additional information at Cedarbrook having to do with some of the things that had happened most recently with the building, some of the environmental issues that had happened there. Everything was pretty much, we just picked up a couple of comments that they had in there as well.
And in terms of the long-range projection for demographics, and I'm thinking about what I read in the draft report, and not very clearly perhaps, but it seemed that we could be looking at capacity in both of these, both of an EP and a Cedarbrook, without any room to grow. I mean, Avi, you took the median. I understand the reason for taking the median, although I think that the demographic study also was really clear that our trends don't match what you'd expect. You look at birth records, and that has no correlation to our kindergarten enrollments, 5 years down the road. And there were speculation that it's people taking their kids out of private schools and coming into the public schools. We talked during the demographic study presentation, I think, about families with young children moving out of Philadelphia and moving into Cheltenham because of our schools once their kids hit school age, which isn't something that's going to be picked up in a demographic, in a census study necessarily. I think the economy did seem to be their major factor that they were looking at in terms of what would predict enrollments, and I understand that the prediction was extremely accurate for, this year's kindergarten enrollment, or within a few students probably. But what's the confidence level of using the median or medium versus the high enrollment going forward? Are we going to bump up against capacity in 10 years? I'm not talking about 5 years, but in 10 years, if under either the medium or the high, if we keep at the same two current sites?
Well, I think demographic analysis needs to be something that's continually done every couple of years. Once and done, it's not, especially with the type of community that you have where you have fluctuations that are not bearing on live births, that you need to constantly update your demographic study. you know, to plan for right now, 10 years out, I think we'd be looking at like overbuilding, planning for overbuilding. And I was just a little bit apprehensive to do something to that magnitude. So that's why I kind of stuck with it. And then again, looking at the low projections, I was kind of thinking that that might not be prudent either, because I see the economy starting to pick up, I see small number of families moving in. So, best guess.
To answer one of your questions, one of the questions that the group asked was, since Cedar Brook has been empty for a couple of years now, has anybody gone back in there and looked at it and see how it's deteriorated or changed in that time period? And the answer was yes, we've been through it. And Dr. Bobby said he goes through their branches about every day. But yeah, there's been some deterioration, but that's all been taken into account into these cost estimates. So there's, you know, no material change as far as the condition of the facility.
I'll defer to other people.
He just wants to comment.
Yeah, I want to comment about the question you just asked me. I believe it used to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you project out for size of, you know, population and the size you can build schools in anticipation of your population, I think you can build anything you want, but I think you can only go so far out in the future and get compensation from the state for your building. I think it was like 3 years or 5 year projections.
You could, 10 years.
Is it 10 years?
Yeah, PE uses 10 years. You can project out 10 years. It's your highest enrollment. 10 years out, either their numbers, your demographer's numbers, or your current enrollment plus 10%. How scientific is that? I don't know.
Whichever is higher.
Whichever is higher. And that's whichever is higher.
Okay. So you can do a ten year projections and get.
Yes. And they recognize that 10 years, it gets to be pretty fuzzy. Between 5 and 10 years, they're fuzzy numbers.
Thank you.
And I guess one lot before I proceed. I remember seeing something in the draft report, and I didn't go back to check and see if it was in the final report, about the soil conditions at Cedar Brook. And I didn't completely understand what you said just here in terms of the current building. Do you anticipate needing to do more?
Not to the current building.
To the current
any
building.
Additions that you do to it, depending on where they're located in the building, likely to do down. The existing building has caissons, which is like a
caisson is actually, they bring in a drill rig that drills a 2 to 3 foot diameter hole. It's almost like a post hole digger, except on steroids. And they go down anywhere from 8 to 18 feet. Wherever it takes, whatever it needs to get to decent soil, it actually creates a bell shape at the bottom, and that's all reinforced and filled with concrete, brought up to the grade level, and then each steel column sits on it. So you would have a grid of those. There is a grid underneath the existing cedar. So all this structure is sitting on virgin solid soil and non-compacted soil, which is just sort of laid there is fine. It's not going to go anywhere, and you know the slabs themselves have been adequately supported, so that's not an issue. So what happens is when you go to build your addition, you need to use a similar type of construction system. You're not going to. Dr. Bobby had there was 40 borings done, so I mean the whole
49.
And I looked at the report. You know the type of soil itself is fine. It just hasn't been compacted. So it's not reliable. No one wants to take any type of chance on that type of a situation. And you're not going to remove 8 to 18 feet of soil and then recompact it.
So you designed the foundations to be able to be supported on that soil.
Right.
And
just what they did in the existing building, what would have to be done in the new addition.
So the cost estimates assuming the same thing for
yes.
An addition.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. I guess renovate at Cedar Brook is not the right word if you're talking about a complete gut.
Rebuild.
I think that's important. You know,
yeah.
We talk about
yeah.
Renovate. Perception of renovate is I'm going to take this down and paint and clean. But when you're talking about going down to the studs and, you know, gutting everything and not worrying about saving ceiling tiles, it's important to stress that to the community because we're talking about over the next 3 years, close between $88 million and $122 million that we're looking at. So I think gutting is a better term to use moving forward. So just two questions that I have. The first one is going back to the utilization study report that you did on Cedarbrook. Seems like we're okay with that current square footage. Was that taking into consideration the additional 20,000 square feet that is being proposed on this renovation, or no? So you said the utilization of Cedarbrook, we're currently at a good percentage.
Doesn't include the 20,000.
Does not include the 20,000 square feet.
Because that's just capacity of the classrooms and of the program spaces.
So do we need the 20,000 additional 20,000 square feet?
For program, yeah.
Okay.
For the gymnasium, cafeteria.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. My last question is, your study has shown us that Cedarbrook can be gutted and we can rebuild using the existing foundation. And looking at the estimate, that would be at a high cost of $48 million.
Total.
What is the analysis on Elkins Park? Can Elkins Park be gutted like Cedarbrook to come in at a cheaper cost of $39 million versus a complete reno of $52 million? So you gave me an answer for Cedarbrook. What is your answer for Elkins Park? Because we're talking about, as soon as we get done Cedarbrook, starting on Elkins Park, or might have to do it simultaneously. So what is the analysis? What does this report say about Elkins Park?
With Elkins Park, we have no existing drawings. So to be able to give you an exact answer, I'm a little hesitant right now because I don't know what I can see. With Cedarbrook, I had wall sections, so I could see what they noted on their wall sections and what was in the walls and what the construction of the wall type was. Elkins Park, I don't have that advantage. I can see what's happening on the outside of the building. So there needs to be a little bit more investigative findings that need to happen at that school that weren't part of this study. And that means there's a cost associated with that to have an investigation, destructive investigation done to determine the vulnerability of those existing walls. Lee, do you want to make any comments in terms of the mechanical systems, or do you have to?
Well, the entire mechanical system is antiquated. I mean, it's 65 years old. One boiler doesn't work. It's steam. It's not hot water. The one boiler is leaking, and the only three are even functional. It's only heated. It's not air conditioned. The ventilation is not up to today's standards. Today you'd have chilled water or water source heat pumps, and you'd have piping water on. You'd be heating with high efficiency gas boilers instead of the old boilers that you have now. The difference, 80% efficiency going up to 95% efficiency. So it's just an antiquated, tired, worn out system. Controls are shot.
So right now it's looking more like a renovation.
Well, no, it's also a rebuild.
Yeah. Okay, but combination. But it's a hybrid. But these costs are based on a rebuild, making the assumption that the bones are good enough to be right. And so if you go in and find out that's not the case, then these numbers here where you say renovate will be
really upset.
Elkins Park, we have drawings on the newest section of Elkins Park, which is a steel frame section. So we know that is a definite good bone portion of the building. You know what I'm talking about, the wing that
Yeah.
So that I can say with some confidence. But there's still a little bit more investigation that needs to be done to the full extent, I guess I should say, in terms of what needs to be done at that point.
Thank you.
Can I just comment on what Mr. Delgado said, that we the intent is not to do these simultaneously. We know we're going to have to put some money into Elkins Park because there's some things that just need to be done right now. They would need to be done even if we were going to do it simultaneously. So we're going to invest some money in doing some improvements there. For example, a good example is there is asbestos flooring. We'd have to remove that regardless of what we did. So we're just going to take care of that. That will improve the site. We do need to do something about the heating system. The heating system will not continue to support winters like we just had. So we're going to have to invest some money in it. But the intent is not to do it simultaneously with the city.
Yeah. I want to follow up on what Mr. Gamata was talking about, because that was one of my questions. If there are great economies, which there obviously are, in rebuilding Cedar Brook using the Cedar Brook bones, if in fact, and obviously the wing at EP is much newer and therefore probably more reliable, but assuming that we have to then wait for 2 years or whatever, 3 years to start an EP, and in that time, the likelihood seems to be that we're going to be putting some major money in EP, i.e. a boiler or two. And if the logic is that maybe it's a better than even bet that we could rebuild, can you do that with the idea that what you put in, if you're going to spend, you know, $750,000 on new boilers, Would those boilers be adequate for the new building that eventually you would fill? I mean, that's a kind of a rhetorical question, but any obviously not the floor tiles that you're going to replace, but any major system that is a major.
Yes, we did 3 years ago install a new boiler. We didn't have the, our boiler system had three boilers, one, but he said it's not working at all. It's not working for many years now. The other one is stopped working, and we are working on it. And so we have one good boiler. So we install one good boiler, and that boiler is right now taking care of the whole building.
You're talking about Elkins Park?
Elkins Park. And anything we do it would be combined with whatever is going to happen in the future. So it's not just going to be, we're going to do this separate. So if we go there and install new fire alarm system, right now our fire alarm system is obsolete. We can't even get the parts for it. And we have to do that. So part of our project would be to look at the asbestos to get the fire alarm system. When we install a new fire alarm system, we're not going to go take it out of the normal. So that would be all.
So we're not completely throwing good money at
it. No, we're not. Okay. We never did.
Okay, thank you. And that's good. As far as the rebuilding of Cedar Brook, and you brought up a very good point, Ms. Hoffman, about the, I thank you for the report, by the way, a great summary of 7,000 pages. it's really, and we all know it, it's the teachers, and it's how the program is delivered, and the quality of the education, not the bricks and mortar that make a great school, and we've known that because we've been living with deteriorating buildings for a long time and still turning out good students. The question is sort of to the administration, if there is a comfort level of our administrators and our staff that the program that we can deliver with a rebuilt Cedar Brook is as good and the quality is there as it would if you knocked everything down to the soil and put in rivers and everything, then fine. I mean, I don't see it. I don't see spending $21-22 million more just to say we build it from scratch. And this, I would say the exact same thing about Cedar Brook. The question is about Elkins Park when it comes to that. Can we go, if the footprint on Cedar Brook is a footprint because of the caissons and the fact that you don't want to build necessarily out further because you don't know what the quality of the soil is going to be, is it possible, based on the studies done, to build up? I mean, could you put another floor on it?
I wouldn't be comfortable doing that because the original foundations are just designed to support what's
there.
Designed for. Add another.
The classroom wing is three stories tall now.
Right.
So you're not going to have a fourth one. Okay. And that basically just adds more traditional classroom space. And then all the other areas, your special spaces, your gymnasiums, your auditoriums, they're all one story. And those roofs are designed for roof loads, not floor loads. So the only way to build up would be to build literally, to take the roof off and add a new structure. Or,
well, we were taking the roof off.
The whole roof structure.
My question is then, I'm going to go back to what was, and I don't think I was understanding what was being said. We have the floor plan that we have now, and the floors that we have now. Within that space, we're going to find 20,000 more square feet of what?
Program space.
What does that mean?
Cafeteria.
So where does that space come from?
Well, it would be added to the building. That's part of what Dr. Bobby had put together. And the 20,000 is an estimate. I mean, because really we haven't done the educational specifications. We haven't gone through that whole process.
Okay, it doesn't matter to me whether it's 20,000 or 18,000 or 15,000.
Right.
I'm just trying to see where 20,000 or 18 or any amount of square space, the program space, so we can go further out from the perimeter of the existing building?
Or we have a courtyard that we could go inside of the courtyard and close that courtyard.
Right.
So there are other options that we need to continue study before.
Yeah, there was a big lobby there when you came in to the entrance there. It was never really used.
Big courtyard. The courtyard never been used.
Okay, so within the perimeter of the existing structure, we could find approximately 20,000 more square feet.
No, we can add outside of that. We just need to use the same type of building construction using caissons and so on.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing preventing us from doing that. We can expand it as large as we want.
Okay, I thought the idea was that because of the soil, we didn't want to put more caisson, that we didn't want to go further than the existing floor.
No, but if you were going to do an addition, you need to design it for foundations to support this.
Okay. Thank you.
So we don't have a sink.
Subterranean.
Thank you very much for the report. I again appreciate the summary of 350 pages of very dense material. Couple of questions in follow-up. When I was looking at the building evaluation rating system for both 2010 and 2014, what was clearly evident to me in terms of priorities, and we know that Cedarbrook has become a higher priority because of the existing, current conditions. And moving the students out of the building. However, what's very clear from both of those evaluation studies is that the high school and EP at both of those points were still higher a priority than Cedarbrook. What I've yet to hear, at least maybe I haven't heard, really what the plan is, and you may not be looking at me, or maybe you're looking at somebody else at the table, what the plan is really for EP and the high school. I haven't heard cost and timeline with respect to anything other than potentially renovating or rebuilding Cedarbrook building Cedarbrook new or rebuilding. The same thing with EP. We know that there's work being done at the high school, but I haven't heard a strategic comprehensive plan that really looks at those three existing remaining buildings. And so I'm still concerned long term, what does that mean? So can someone answer that for me?
I'll take a stab. I'm concerned as you are, Mrs. Haywood, with BP and the high school. We're now investing in the high school. We're transforming some of the core spaces and some of the issues that have been there for a long time, the doors, for example. So we are investing in the high school, and we've already begun discussions about what we need to do. And some of that discussion was here tonight in terms of what we're going to do. We're going to have to put some money in DP. What we're trying to do is be smart about it and put the money into things that we would have to do anyway. But we need to do some work in DP. That would buy us some time so we can take a complete look at what we need to do at EP. And that's where we are right now.
I would actually ask for kind of a cost and timeline, just to really see if we're talking about EP in 2 years, what are we projecting as cost? To kind of hobble along until we do something else. The same thing with the high school. So again, I don't still have a full comprehensive picture, but what does that mean in terms of spending in the district for beyond Cedarbrook rebuild or renovation versus what needs to happen for these other buildings until we make some other decision?
We're probably, and I'm going to go out on a limb because this is still a discussion, but I think your question deserves an answer. We're probably talking a couple years. We're probably talking a couple $1 million that we need to put into Elkins Park School.
How about the high school?
Do you have any thoughts on that?
High school, I don't have the list in front of me, but we are spending close to $1 million, $10 million, over $10 million just in a year and a half that's been work in progress. Will be complete the next four months. And at the EP, I did talk to our engineers. We look at our HVAC system. We look at how we're going to phase this, because you have to remember the EP now, they have the students there. So it's completely different than at the Cedarbrook. There's no student. So the phasing of it is very difficult. We also, like Gilbert said, that we have to look at the just to come up with the cost, the structure needs to be studied and you know, to come back and say, well, these are the structural issues, this is the cost estimate that we think. At this time, I do have a cost estimate on the mechanical electrical would be three phases. That I just received that cost estimate today. And we had a meeting this morning with Mr. Mike Noel, and we are working on this. It's not the so this is how much it costs. This is, you have to do a lot of research. It needs to be done before we come out and give you that.
Is it possible to have any of that information for this Tuesday when we're going on what the recommendation is?
I don't have the. It's a lot of information that I don't have at this time.
I just want to make sure.
You're pinching me. I don't
have a question. No, once again, Daniel, thank you for this nice, very nice summary, because I didn't have time to go through the, was it 4,000 or 5,000 page? Anyway, I guess I was really high on having a 5-8 configuration, but after looking at all the options, especially trying to put it on the Cedarbrook site and cutting into all the athletic fields, and when you have people, you've got to look at us as a, I guess, a business too, where parents maybe in Philadelphia, maybe they want to move out, they're going to look at Cheltenham and Upper Dublin, Springfield, and if we don't have the same type of facility, it would be great to have that 5-8 building at Cedarbrook, but when you're looking, but we can't accommodate. When I look at all the plans and the facilities and so forth, and going outside and developing, trying to get land acquisition, and who knows what the cost will be there. I'm really strong on this option 5, because it sounds like the rebuild, once we're finished, is, to me, from what you're telling me, it's basically a brand new building, right? And the kids will be able to move in there. We get moving on it by fall of September 2017, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, it just, in terms of cost, too, I mean, it looks like the best option, and basically, we got a new building for the kids, they can move in and get moving. And I guess my question would be, with the items we've got to have to put into Elkins Park, I just want to make sure I'm clear. If you're going to put in a new boiler, new fire alarm system, which we desperately need, and if you're looking at some of the pictures, definitely things have to be done. We're able to do that in a way that if we do a rebuild in Elkins Park, we can keep that, right?
Absolutely.
And so I just wanted to make sure that's what you said, and I want to be clear on that. And we don't want to move those kids out while the Cedarbrook, that just would not be tangible to do that. I guess my other question would be, at the high school, done a lot, you did the, you know, hot and cold water pipes, the little theater, the doors, are there, and the roof, are there any other, kind of follow up with your question, to say, with, are there any other pressing issues, big issues at the high school once
the roof? The roof would be our, we
are doing that in pieces.
Right. We did, we spent close to $1 million on two sections of the roof.
Right.
We'd like to do another section, which is leaking really bad now. So that's a priority now to move roof work. And that's our next plan, is to do it. Pick the area, the worst area, and then do that side. And we'd like to spend around $1 million on that to get that part of the done too. So the high school, the high school is a lot of square footage. So we divided into different areas, and we're going to put in a good roof for the last 30 years.
Right, so that's the main pressing issue to
There are ADA issues, there are with the pool areas, there are issues, there are air conditioning issues. We have boilers issue also there too. We have storm water management problems there. We have the sewer line problems, the terracotta is all cracking. We have the roof drain is a lot of them not working properly. So we have a lot of issues. Well, if you prioritize that, if we keep going, we fix the domestic, hot and cold water, which was major work that we did. Our control system that it looks like an EP that is
submarine.
So that is gone. In 2 months, I was the same. It's going to be gone. So we have a new one. So we ought to keep doing that.
So it's going to be pretty much ongoing.
We have ongoing until we get it all done. And what we're building is not just for that. 5 years or 10 years. This is a long term, 30-40 years if we maintain it properly.
And that's something that once you have time, you can kind of project out how much those costs will be at the high school.
I did that already. And I have that projection.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, do you have any questions?
Sure. I appreciate the work and all that stuff. Thank you. When I look at this, I consider there are probably about three different options now. I originally had only two. My two options were, my personal dream scenario was also a 5 through 8 at a new site. And then the low-cost option is 5 and 6. Options 5 and 6, which is just rebuild each at their existing site. I now have to throw in a mid-tier option, which is rebuild Cedar Brook and build a new EP, because there's some concerns that we don't know. Well, that's good insight. So for me, the low option, assuming the high end of all the ranges, is an $88 million rebuild of each school. The mid option is $101 million rebuild of Cedar Brook and build a new EP. And my dream scenario is $115 million. And I'll assume that, for some, the site acquisition costs will be offset by the benefit of selling existing buildings. And so the variance to me, though, is my mid scenario is $13 million between my low and my mid. That, to me, is something that I want to make sure of in advance. So I don't know how far along through the process we can go before we identify is a rebuild of EP feasible, but I'd love to know that soon.
Just to answer about EP, EP isn't anything we haven't seen before. We have partial drawings, but for the areas that we don't have them, it's nothing new. Not rocket science. We've seen hundreds of school buildings like this. We just don't have the drawings. So what that takes is, which is going further than what the master plan is to actually go through and do an analysis, measure it all up, draw it up, measure the structure that's above all the ceilings, all the things that you can't see, or it takes some extra time to do, and create your own set of documents. And that takes a little bit of time and a little bit of money to be able to do that, but then it also provides.
Take out to you a little bit. How much time? And I won't ask you for how much money, but how much?
We'll get the discount rate.
You've been getting the discount rate.
We just get to know that.
How much time are we talking?
Within 2 months, we'd have it all drawn up.
Okay. I would certainly like to propose that we do that as soon as possible.
Comment on that. One of the reasons that we haven't done all that is because the purpose is to get started with Cedarbrook so we can get the students back into the building. And it just hits me in the face every day when I go to these satellite locations that we really need to do that. And that's, and I would agree that we need to go to that level of analysis. That has not been our focus, though.
Let me just ask a question. It's come up a couple of times. Does you're obtaining that information hinder you from making a decision about moving forward with Cedarbrook? And so help us understand
absolutely.
Why.
So for me, I'm not making a decision. And God forbid, if any of us are making a decision just about Cedarbrook, then we are being relatively short-sighted. My assumption, if we rebuild Cedarbrook, is I'm also going to rebuild. There's precedent. I'm doing decisions that I think will still be able to provide a quality building and education at a price that we can afford. That's my assumption. If we go continue to move down the rebuild Cedarbrook route, next up is a rebuild of EP. I don't think there's. I'm not angling towards building.
Even if it isn't, what would that have to do with rebuilding Cedarbrook?
Because now all of a sudden, if I have to build a new EP, then I'm looking at a $101 million option as opposed to what I think is an $88 million option, and I might be able to build a 5-8 at Cedarbrook for $107. Now I'm looking at the benefits of reconfiguring and providing that.
Then you're also factoring in terms of these students being out, for additional years, and you're factoring
all
that in.
Yeah, it's probably to me an additional year and something, and
where we don't have a lease to carry us out that far as well.
And it's 4 years actually on the golf course.
My timing considerations is very far down on my list of priorities. It's what can I afford, and what can I afford that will let the kids. My kids' kids, have the appropriate education that they need, right? These buildings are going to last, hopefully, for 40, 50, somewhere around there. I don't know.
We tend to keep up with
them. So I don't want to say I'm going to build the wrong one because I need to get it in and up and out or a year or 2 years before the right one. I'll take the time to do the right one. I just want to make sure that the right one is the one that we can afford. To me, I can understand the dollars and cents, and realistically, I look at this is what happens when you have a teaser spike, is you do the $88 million renovating or rebuilding of Cedarbrook and EP. I would, though, like to know, rebuild.
I know, it's $83 million to look at the
lower. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, that's it. We got the discount.
So my question first is, if we continue to move forward with design team, et cetera, can we, at the same time, in a parallel track, identify, yes, don't worry, you can continue with the assumptions of rebuilding EP, that will be a viable option. Again, we won't have spent gobs of money to move down the, rebuild Cedarbrook and EP route. We would have put out an RFP, but I'm trying to figure out, that's one item that perhaps would have me reconsider my decision if I can't rebuild EP. So, we continue to move forward while you guys get the drawings that you need so that my professional, engineers can say, yes, that is still a viable option. That's my pertinent concern. Secondary concern is, can we get a look at the towers and if we can redistrict, because again, this is a district-wide feasibility study. I still want to figure out what in the world are we doing with Glenside Elementary, and at some point we'll have to talk about what are we doing with the admin, but I don't want to lose sight of EP is the one that really helps to integrate into my Cedarbrook decision.
Mr.
Payne.
Yeah.
Thank you for your presentation and all your work. Karen, thank you for all the work. I'm going to reference. To the best of my ability, I've put in a ton of time on this as co-chair with my colleague here on the facilities committee. And I've looked at a lot of stuff. I started out asking, and we received from Kara the numbers on Magic Poof for the golf course. And what did I say? I'm sorry, Ms. Michaels. Magic Poof, the golf course, whatever it is, rebuilding here, rebuilding there, this configuration, that configuration. I then asked for the budgetary programmatic projections going forward, because these don't live in isolation of each other. We have to raise taxes from time to time, and it's not something that we do easily or that we necessarily want to do. We're limited to a 1.9% tax increase, and the forecast going forward, I believe, was in that range. We weren't expecting, nor were we hoping, to raise taxes beyond that level on our community. So when you look at what we would need to finance, what our costs are going to be in terms of programs, in terms of increases, we're negotiating a contract right now. It was very clear to me on strictly a financial thing, and I'm not a numbers guy, that looking at a building that can be completely rebuilt, re-imaged, it won't look like what we have today. With the timeline that we have, this is clearly the way that we need to go. Cedarbrook was abandoned 1 year ago. We approved 1 year ago moving out of there. And from a cost and program standpoint, I truly, sincerely believe that to meet our mission, which is educating children, we need to put our children from a scattered site back to where they came. I used a lot of conversations with people to try to better understand this, and I've talked with a lot of Cedarbrook teachers. I've talked with the high school principal for the year, or otherwise known as former Cedarbrook principal. And I've talked with parents and even with some students. And I am firmly convinced that we need to proceed. We need to build this school. This is our charge as a school board, is to put that building back. That was never, ever to just say, to hell with the other buildings. That was not to exclude EP, knowing that it's falling down. But Cedarbrook got moved in front of EP, unfortunately, when we abandoned the building last year. We need to be back in the building. I spent a little bit of time at some of the Cedarbrook satellite sites, not nearly as much as our superintendent. They're not great. They're working, but they're not great. And we are running into a problem out at Cedarbrook West, where we have our entire seventh grade. They're building. They have shown up there, and they now have a welder there every day. And today they delivered a dumpster to the site. So I don't see any hope that they're going to extend it or that we would want to extend it, because after the welder's done, they're going to send their inspector back in to look at his welds, and then they're going to close that building up. And that may mean some cranes and things to move prefab walls into place. I don't know what the design is. Anyway, what I'm saying is, without taking anything for granted, I continue to say that we need to move into this. We need to move into the construction phase of Cedarbrook, make that building the best that we can make it, and put our nationally recognized faculty back together. They are frayed, and the longer we keep them apart, the more damage it's going to do to putting the school back together. So we did pass a resolution to move in this direction, and I think that we have to continue to move forward on this path. We're not really back at an intersection. Sorry, it wasn't really a question.
Mr. Rackham?
I wanted to do a follow-up to something that was brought up in the earlier part of the presentation in the study of the various schools, and that was going back to something which Mr. Nelson reiterated. I'd like to follow up on it. We do have
the studies that are done, or the basis of the demographics, talk about numbers, making sure that the numbers are balanced. And in our school district, they're not. So even if all you did was look at the numbers, you can see that we have a problem in terms of the elementary schools. But the reality is that far beyond the numbers, it's not how many children are in the classroom, it's the quality of the education that can be delivered to the children that you find in any given classroom at any given time. You can have a very dysfunctional class of 15. You can have a tremendously functional class of 30. So just looking at the numbers and saying, well, all the schools are balanced, we're in good shape, is not the answer. And every educator knows that. On top of that, seeing the inequality, I really hope that one of the things that we can address, I agree with Mr. England wholeheartedly, we've got to move ahead and get Cedarbrook built. We are losing residents. People are expressing fear and frustration because they don't like the configuration of Cedarbrook, and there is plenty of conversation in the neighborhood about pulling kids out of Cheltenham schools that are headed for Cedarbrook in the next couple of years because they have seen it, they've sampled, and they don't like it. And I don't blame them. I can't speak for the faculty, but I know that it's been very difficult for them. And this would be, at the fastest, it would be 3 years that they've been apart trying to maintain a program in three separate sites. And I think we need to move ahead with that. But I really, really hope that we can put a lot of focus in education on making sure that the earliest years, that we're not shortchanging the children, because when we move past the talk of how many apples are in each classroom, we're also going to come very quickly to the conversation we always come down to, and that is the achievement gap. And the only way to close the achievement gap, I'm saying it again, is not to let it open. And it opens at the earliest years. And the longer we have inequalities of the ability to educate all of our children equitably from kindergarten on up, the longer that happens, the harder it's going to be to ever close the achievement gap in the middle years and in high school. So I hope we're able to address that very, very quickly.
We'll go to the public now, and I'll come back to the table if there are questions. Please introduce yourself.
My name's Joel Fishbein. I'm from Hopkins Park. If you put up the slide with the numbers for the rebuild or renovate. It was yellow.
35.
After 6A?
Why 35?
Yeah.
Page 35.
This one?
That one.
That one?
No, that's the one. I was confused when Mr. Nelson was talking about the cost differentials, and I just want to make sure I understand what is going on. What the numbers are for rebuilding EP, new middle school, a new 5-6 at the EP site.
That's not.
This is all 5-8
up. This is all new. People there. So what I was suggesting is, if you were to do a renovate Cedarbrook and add a new 5-6, that's about $105 million at Cedarbrook. Hold on to that now. If you could go to the Cedarbrook.
But if you rebuild both, it was 83.
There it is.
38 million.
More. There it is.
Right.
So then you add those two, gets you to your 88.
Yeah, no, but I have a different
add the
question.
48 and the 52 right. Is where I got to the 101.
Got it. New at Elkins Park site versus renovate at Elkins Park site is what I'm now confused about, because we're talking a lot about what's going to happen to that building. Mm-hmm. I've heard about the roof, the boiler, the fire alarm, but I haven't heard, and maybe that's because I haven't been to all the meetings, what is wrong with the wall, the structure of the EP school. Is that something that...
That's the only area that we need to go back and study. We did take a look at the electrical, mechanical, roof system, architectural, such as windows, doors, and ADA, and all the code. There is an area that I would like to go back. and study a little bit in more detail. That would be a structural to find out what else is out there that we don't know.
Okay. So when we go back up to option 5 at Cedar Brook, what that means is taking it down and using the current foundation to build it back up again with 20,000 or so extra square feet taken out of the courtyard. The renovate
that's not an accurate description.
Okay.
We're not taking it down to the foundation. The steel structure stays up, the concrete floors and the steel pans stay. The majority of the concrete block interior walls would stay. It's all, everything else, the infrastructure, the ceilings, the lights, the mechanical systems, the plumbing systems would all be changed, as well as the exterior walls. So there's quite a bit left.
Okay, so the classrooms that exist now would still exist in the new building?
Right.
Yes. Okay.
But most, I'll say most in general, because as we go through it programmatically, there may be a desire to change some of them.
And the estimate for renovate at Elkins Park site, is that a similar path?
I'm going to say yes. But we don't know about the exterior walls. We're not sure that that would need to be done to that extent. So until that is explored further, you know, we have adequate budget numbers in for that renovation or rebuild.
And if we find that there are problems with the exterior walls, would that be why we would then decide to go to 6A at the Elkins Park site?
Well, I think once that task was undertaken, and if and when that was discovered, then that would be a decision to come back to the board to look at.
So that we don't have another Myers that runs into cost overruns. Got it. Now I understand what was troubling you. Thank you.
Any other questions as we come around?
Okay. Hi, Tom Boraski, Glenside. In the early 90s, enrollment in the district exceeded your upper demographic projection. And I was just wondering, what is the peak enrollment historically of the district, and what was the building footprints at that time? I mean, in other words, are we looking at the past at all to see what you could do with your current study here?
Can I just comment on that? A lot of programmatic things have occurred since 1990. The introduction of computers, computer labs, additional spaces in libraries to allow for research online and things like that. So the comparison from 1990 to 2015, so much has happened in education that requires more program space. So it would be very difficult to take that. For example, you could say that in 1990 there were X number of students in the high school. You would never be able to accommodate that number of students in 2015 with the current program and improvements that have taken place in 25 years.
Can you give me an example? I mean, computers. I mean, it's all Wi-Fi and they have laptops. What's changed with computers? They could be in a classroom with their computer.
We have computer music labs now that are program space, as an example.
All right. Well, I'm a software engineer, so I mean, I don't know.
Special
education, support programs, guidance. Okay. So, any other public questions?
I'm sorry. I have.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. I'd like to just say that the intent is to transform the middle school to a state-of-the-art school. For those of people that would expect just new structure or new construction, but you'd see the same Cedar Brook, that's not the intent. You're going to see a new state-of-the-art school. Yes, it's going to be rebuilt, but knowing the faculty, staff, and design team, it's going to go to work in this.
This will be a middle school that the community would be very proud of, and I am confident of that. I also want to pick up on some of the comments that have been made. We can move ahead with Cedar Brook, and at the same time, do the analysis of EP, because we do need to do that. You're absolutely correct. I'm at the point that I think that we should move ahead with the Cedar Brook, and we should move ahead with taking a closer look at Elkins Park, and that would be my recommendation.
Mr. Nelson,
please. Thank you. I was just interested more in the undersized classroom thing with EP, but we can deal with that at a later time. That's one of those things that also concerns me.
I mean, 660 square foot was the norm back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that's when the Department of Education put together their plan con process. They also haven't changed their reimbursement process since then, too. You can see where that's gotten us. But they calculated it based upon what they knew of their educational programming at that point in time. And as Dr. Kiefer said, since the 90s, things have changed dramatically. It's even extraordinary from the 70s. With all the extra spaces that are necessary to properly address all students' needs there.
Yeah.
And those are the things, that's why they use their methodology analyzing space and capacities, and why our organization, the Education Facilities Planners International, has developed theirs. And there's thousands of professional educators and programmers who are constantly studying this, and they're the ones who keep pushing the envelope, which is why we keep pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
And how do we take those types of criteria and instill it into this facility? I mean, it's exciting, and I think it has a great opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a real quick question. On EP, quick question. If we had a build a new EP, is there enough room in that lower level to build a new EP down there and keep the children in the old EP while that construction is going on, or is that not possible?
Yeah, in the study that I did in 2010, I had done a footprint in that oval running track area,
right,
and build a new school there, keeping the existing school operational until the new one is constructed.
Okay, thank you. One last
agenda item.
Yes, Brooke, middle school project. The purpose is to hire a design team for Cedar Brook construction project. Information. We did talk a lot about what's going to happen to the Cedar Brook. We do need to do some demolition work, and that would be exterior wall, and to the extent of how much demolition going to be, which is at this time we can answer, but we do know that we would put entire new HVAC system, everything going to be brand new, as we're going to get rid of the old boilers that we have. It would be all new, brand new high efficient boiler with all new plumbing, all new electrical, the sprinkler system, which is something we don't have. Would be a stormwater management we don't have. Would be new roof and get rid of all those roof deck is damaged. We're going to get all that out and put all brand new roof there. Again, we have four roof system. One area is roof over roof. And all new kitchen equipment, kitchen design, all new brand new furniture, new security system, our lavatory. We have two, it's ADA now, from all the lavatories, and that happened 2 years ago. We renovated those two. We will keep those too because they're brand new, but we're going to do the rest of them. The 20,000 square foot, we did talk about it. There are several areas that we're going to address. One would be the courtyard. We're going to take a look at that. That's all that's going to happen during the programming part that we need to talk to our teachers, principals. And we're going to take a look at the cafeteria. We're going to take a look at the auditorium. Exterior wall design, that would be all included, all new windows, which is our windows are not high efficient now. Would be all the architectural, interior design, and finishes, which is ceiling, walls, floors, doors, and etc. Would be actual total rebuild the building. We could use different wording for that, but that's pretty much that building. Got to be a lot more than what we did to the Myers. So as a result, the summary with that, and the chair recommends a resolution for Department Support Service to complete the RFP request for proposal for distribution and bid.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the facilities committee meeting. Obviously, several action items on the agenda.
This is an action item.
For next Tuesday,
right? Yeah.
So, thank you. Thank you, Phil. You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
If you're headed back, safe travel.
Yeah. Might be the
hopefully it's warmed up by now.
Actually, listen, it sounds wet out there now.
Okay.
It's 34 degrees.
That's a good call. On your cell phone.
Can we get a 3-minute break before the next?
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivations 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.